Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to Indie Birth's Taking Birth Back podcast series here on iTunes. Today we're continuing our very long discussion via podcast, of course, about the prenatal period. As I say at the beginning of pretty much every podcast, my focus on the prenatal period is a passionate one. For the obvious reasons, I believe that the more knowledge and education we have during our pregnancies, the more knowledge and empowerment will come in our births and for our babies as a result of. So the prenatal period is really important to me. I really want to help make sure that women know what they're doing when they're receiving prenatal care, why they're receiving the care they are, that they learn to ask questions. And today's topic is about prenatal testing in the first trimester. So specifically first trimester here, there is a lot of testing really in the average pregnancy nowadays. And some happens, you know, second and third trimester as well. But today is first trimester prenatal testing, and we're going to be focusing on blood work mainly and some cultures. Even though ultrasound is unfortunately routine at many visits, and most definitely in the first trimester for many women, especially those that are seeing a doctor. So this isn't going to be about ultrasound simply because that's a huge topic and I plan to cover that extensively at another time. So prenatal testing in the first trimester, you're seeing a doctor, you're seeing a midwife, your very first visit, usually around maybe 8 weeks or so, could be earlier, could be later, and you're met with order for blood work. It's kind of like, welcome to pregnancy. You're officially pregnant. First, we'll do an ultrasound, and then we'll either draw your blood here for all these random things that we're not really going to tell you about, or we'll send you to the lab. And then we won't really tell you your results unless we're super concerned about them. So what's the point? Why are these tests being done? Why, as simple as they may be, do women not know what's being done on them? Why aren't they understood? And why aren't women being offered a choice? Why aren't they being offered a really simple education even as to what these tests are? They're not hard to explain, but in my personal experience, at least with a doctor, I wasn't given a choice or offered an explanation for absolutely anything testing-wise, and I think that's pretty typical. So if we're going to talk about routine testing, because this is in fact routine, and again, this is across the board, doctors, midwives offer this standard blood work at the first visit or so, we should be questioning it. I think anything and everything that has become routine in, you know, the American pregnancy in particular should be questioned. Because as you may have heard on previous podcasts, such as the one about the efficacy of prenatal care, meaning how effective is it, it's not very. And there's research to back that up. There's research to say that what we're doing in the United States right now for prenatal care really isn't very effective, and there aren't better outcomes for our moms and our babies in the U.S. because of it. So routine should always be questioned. Just because it's always been done doesn't mean that we should continue doing it. We need to ask questions. So as far as prenatal testing in the first trimester goes, why is it routine? You know, I think I have some possible answers to this. I do think that some women may need this testing. Some women may want this testing once they hear what it's about. But everybody, every pregnant woman, no. There's virtually no need for that. It is a waste of money to implement this kind of testing, just like it's a waste of money to have the extensive amount of prenatal visits that we do here in the U.S. That's been proven as well. So unless you're a special case, and there are some, or high risk for whatever reason, then, you know, you're contributing really to the waste of money if you're not questioning these things. I think philosophically as well, this testing in the first trimester at the first visit is a really poor reaction. It's a really poor premise to begin a pregnancy on. Now, certainly, you know, if you're seeing a midwife especially, that's not the only thing that happens at the first visit. So, you know, it can't be said across the board that this is the premise a pregnancy is built on. But in many cases, it is. To have the first visit be so diagnostic and so full of testing as if to prove that not only are you pregnant, but, you know, you fit into the box of healthy pregnancy, whatever that means for somebody, I think is not the best way to start. Again, if you've listened to previous podcasts, it's all about connecting with ourselves and looking towards the inside. We can always look to the outside for help and support if we need it, but we don't start there because then we're not able to answer our own questions. So again, I think it's just a poor premise to walk into an office and barely know the doctor's name. You know, they really don't know you at all. There may not even be a history taking at all before these tests are ordered because, again, they're routine. They're not based on you as an individual or your needs. So my goal for today is helping you understand what this testing is about so you don't just go fill your lab order and think that, oh, this is just how it goes when I'm pregnant, this is just what I need to do, and then never know what you're even being tested for or what your results are, because not everything is necessary. Maybe for some, but again, to think it's necessary for all is just not true. So prenatal blood work, first trimester. What could be some potential reasons that this could be valid, that this would be an effective way of making sure that we have really great outcomes in this good old United States of ours? Because that's the point, right? Don't you think? That this should mean something. Otherwise, it's just sort of, tradition, really. So I was racking my own brain, trying to think of reasons that this is a great idea. For just sort of the average woman that comes in. And let's see, I think it could be said that it screens, that the blood work may screen for potential problems. I don't think that's completely untrue. However, infection for one, anemia, we'll talk more about these. Those are some potential issues that this blood work might identify. However, as I'll say probably 10 more times, a good history taking or knowing your own history well would also alert you to these possibilities for yourself. So again, we're talking about testing for everybody. Some people will have factors in their history that would make them more likely to want this testing or to agree to it. So that's one reason. I think the other one is to identify who is high risk. Now that's a loaded topic, and that's again, another day, another podcast. High risk. What does that mean anymore? And why does the definition keep changing? Now, high risk can be age. So, you know, anybody over 35, I am suddenly high risk with my own pregnancy, even though I've always been healthy and, you know, not had any issues. But simply age is suddenly high risk. There are certain ethnic groups that may be high risk. And again, some of these things, such as ethnicity, may play into higher risk factors for some blood-related tests. So it's not entirely ridiculous, but again, we're talking about everybody. Does this help, you know, everybody? So it may determine who's high risk. I don't necessarily argue too much with that. It may identify somebody that's high risk. But let's take the opposite side of the coin there with that argument that this blood work somehow will deem a woman low risk. That I really have to argue with. When we talk in detail in a couple minutes about the blood work, you'll see that a lot of it is just screening. It's not definitive in any way. So whether or not someone's low risk due to this blood work or the result of, I'm not seeing it. However, it is quite the political issue, which is why I'm bringing it up, in such places as Arizona right now. They are in debate over their rules and regulations with the licensed midwives there. And the Board of Health essentially has said that midwives must get this blood work done for their clients. I think it's still in debate, so don't quote me on that, as far as whether maybe they'll just be able to do a consult with another doctor or a nurse midwife. But in other words, the state is saying that this blood work is so important, and without it, a woman can't be called low risk. So we can't say she's safe enough for home birth unless we have this blood work. And I think that's just not true. It's just become a political bargaining chip in this case, I think. And again, when we talk in detail, you may agree as well that there are ways possibly to say if someone's high risk or low risk, but this blood work, no. And it definitely infringes on a mother's right, a woman's right to, you know what the testing is about and to refuse it. And in a place like Arizona, if things play out in a certain way, it could be that the women there cannot refuse this blood work. Otherwise, they cannot have a licensed midwife at their home birth, which is absolutely ridiculous. And again, more a political move than anything. However, I will say that in rare cases, there are certain things about this blood work that, you know, could be really important for some women. And one such example would be a woman that has Rh negative blood type that hasn't had the Rogam injection in a previous pregnancy with a positive baby and does have antibodies. So, you know, those women, the Rh negative women, should be really educated on that subject. And still, I believe they should make their own choices as to whether or not they would like to be screened for antibodies. I think most would just be screened. It's not necessarily a risk to be screened. And if you did have antibodies, then it would be something that you would want to be aware of. So again, there are rare cases, but we're talking about everybody. Does this assure health of, you know, the average low-risk woman? I don't think so. Besides that, it can provide baseline readings. And if you listen to my podcast on prenatal skills, such as interpreting your blood pressure when someone else takes it or understanding why it would even be taken in the first place, then you'll know what a baseline is. And those are the readings, you know, such as blood pressure or maybe iron levels that we look at the beginning of a pregnancy. Baseline meaning the one you start with. And then the baseline reading can be compared to a later reading. So another hemoglobin or another blood pressure reading. And baseline readings can be really helpful. So I can understand that. So those are the couple reasons I came up with why this would be necessary. And, you know, as you just heard, I don't think a lot of them are super secure in their argument. But we'll keep going. Again, it's not that there won't be some women that need or want this testing. But why aren't women being treated like individuals? Why is anything routine? It shouldn't be. And midwives know this, although they can be guilty of it as well. We need to understand a woman's history. You know, you need to understand your own history, your medical background, and what it means, and what your family medical background could mean, and know your blood type, and understand these things that are unique to you, because no one else is going to treat them like it's very unique. You're just going to be treated like everybody else, and you don't really know then if, you know, this is something you should do. How could you know if you don't know sort of what's the normal standard? You don't know where you fit in that spectrum. So I always am hoping that more attention will be paid by midwives and doctors to each individual woman so that this one-size-fits-all thing can stop. But women need to take control, too, of their own healthcare and know their own unique needs. So I think both of those things need to happen. And then something like this, you know, filling a lab order doesn't become such a big deal in a way, because if the woman believes she wants it or needs it, she'll do it. And if she doesn't, she won't. It's really not that hard. Then she won't be pressured into it or bullied into it. So we as women need to do our part. We're not victims, or I don't think anyone's guilty necessarily. It's just the way the system works, and we can step up and claim our responsibility. So, again, you know, I like to discuss these tests when I was working, even as a licensed midwife. It was something I did for sure. I would never just hand somebody a lab order or assume they wanted it. And, you know, that's for many reasons, because I believe women deserve this information and they should understand it. And also because these tests cost money. And many of the women I saw were not under, you know, medical insurance, and they would be paying out of pocket. So it's being considerate, you know, of all of these things. People that have insurance, you know, in some cases aren't really thinking or whatever. They're just saying, oh, well, it's paid for. But people that aren't need to really consider. Everybody needs to consider. But money does sometimes play a part. So even as midwives, we need to talk about these tests. Everything is a choice. And again, I would say to women, this may be more than you want to know. Maybe you don't care that much about what a CBC is. So, you know, you can tell me to stop talking, but I want you to know, because nothing is across the board for everybody. So this testing should be offered and explained, but it should not be required. That is my point. I tried to find some history on when this began, and I really didn't find anything. So I'm open to learning if anybody has any information. So what I mean is, when did this become standard to take blood at the first visit and test it for all these things in pregnancy? One of the tests, as we'll talk about, is called a prenatal panel. And where did this come from? I don't know. I can't find the history. I don't know who decided that all of this was a good idea and what they were basing it on. And, you know, there are no studies out there that I've seen that say, again, that it's really effective, cost effective, or, you know, outcome based effective. So let's begin here, finally, with what is the routine testing? Let's start with blood work. The most simple test you could possibly get, and you could order it on its own, is your blood group and type. So that would be like A or B or O group, and then the type would be positive or negative. And you're not going to go into all the intricacies of blood types, groups and types right now, but it is important to know your blood type. I think it is. So if you wanted to do that, like right now, you could order an Eldon card online, or even get one at a local pharmacy. I know the one near us has them, E-L-D-O-N, Eldon card. And it's really a primitive kind of test where you prick your finger, get some blood, mix it with water on these little circles, and it creates a pattern. And when you look up how the pattern goes on the card, it'll tell you your blood type. So this isn't a test that you need to go to anybody for. And I know, as a midwife, if someone had presented me with their Eldon card as sort of proof of their blood type, and I wouldn't necessarily need proof, I believe people, you know, I think that's great. I wouldn't feel that they needed to order a lab test. So blood group and type is important in pregnancy, just so you know your options. So if you are a negative blood type and you have no idea, then you're totally unaware of all the controversy and options and testing around that. So again, it's just knowing. What you choose to do with that is your business, but it is a lot of information to take in. And if you're positive, then really, it's pretty straightforward. So knowing your blood group and type really isn't that crazy. And again, you can do it yourself, which is nice. And you can do that for your kids too, or your partner, if you're wondering about their blood types. Of course, you can get it from the lab as well, as part of, you know, a bunch of other stuff, or separately. So that's the first thing. And again, I can see that one, just so that a woman is aware of her options. A CBC is possibly the most typical thing, and CBC stands for complete blood count. So a CBC can be ordered for anybody at any time in life. It's not a pregnancy test per se at all. It's just looking at the makeup of the blood that they draw out of you. So your iron count, the oxygen carrying capacity of your red blood cells. How many in percentage red blood cells you have. Those numbers are important, or can be, in pregnancy. Your white blood cell count. So is your body fighting something, or is there some kind of, you know, immune response going on? Platelets is another thing. So how well does your blood clot? So a CBC can tell you these things, and it can be helpful. I don't think it's completely necessary for somebody without anything in their medical history as far as anemia or that kind of thing. But just for your average healthy woman, you know, if you listen to the nutrition podcast, you'll know that we do look at the hemoglobin and we like to see that it's dropped mid-pregnancy from the beginning of pregnancy to reflect that the mom is getting enough protein and calories in her diet and has expanded her blood volume. So I don't think that's a crazy idea. And as far as I can see, there's no, huge risk with getting a CBC. The good news about CBCs is they're pretty cheap. So even if you don't have insurance, you can usually get one for about $20-$30 cash. So again, it can also identify anemias if you are anemic. So it can be helpful with that. Although I would still argue that for low-risk women without a history, that it's probably unnecessary. You know, looking at the hemoglobin is really cool, but women have other signs of blood volume expansion and feeling good and having a baby that's growing well. So it's kind of up to her, I think, up to you if you want to see this drop via a lab value. The other way to do it is to just do a finger prick to get your hemoglobin count and... most people don't have those kind of machines, but many midwives do, and it's pretty low tech. It's just a finger prick and a couple drops of blood, so the cost associated is tons lower, and there's absolutely no reason that you couldn't do that initially in pregnancy and then again mid-pregnancy to assess your blood volume expansion. You don't need a fancy lab test for that. It's not looking at hematocrit, however, which is the percentage of red blood cells in your body. So if that's important to you, and it can be, then you'll still want a lab draw. Let's see. The thing about a CBC, I guess the only sort of risk associated is that because these tests are becoming mandatory in many places, as I explained, then sometimes there are results, even with the CBC, that are associated with risking out women for home birth. Now, I'm not really going to comment on if that's appropriate or not. If someone is truly ill or truly anemic or sickly then that's a whole nother discussion whether that woman should have a home birth. But being risked out for only a number is kind of ridiculous, because as midwives, we know to look at the whole woman and her whole health and, what's going on with her rather than just a number. But rules and regulations in many places, for midwives even, are saying that the hematocrit, hemoglobin, have to be a certain number or above to be approved for a home birth. So, I think that just becomes a political issue in many cases, because if women are being forced to consent to this blood work, then there's really nothing they can do if they were to become, high risk suddenly. And I just don't necessarily agree with that. Numbers can fluctuate. And again, a woman who is aware of her history and her general health, if she's working with a midwife that is also looking at the big picture, then there are other things going on and it shouldn't be based on just one number. But my point with that really is that, these things sort of can be used against you when they're required by law, which is just a whole nother issue. Then you get into results making or breaking people for their birth choices, which is just complicated. But it's something to consider, because who would think that, right? When they just get a lab order and take it to the lab and just sort of follow orders, that their results could possibly change their birth plan, and potentially for no good reason. So the CBC, again, most common, cheapest, know what that's about now. Actually, the most common, I guess, is the prenatal panel, which is a whole workup, and it includes the CBC. So I started with the CBC, but really the prenatal panel is like the big one, and that would include what we just talked about. So a prenatal panel, that's what it's called, prenatal blood panel, includes the CBC plus other testing, all from the same vial of blood, rubella, syphilis, in some places HIV. You can opt to have it added or it's just part of it. Hepatitis B, and also an antibody screen. So again, for women that are Rh negative, to screen them for antibodies. So, yeah, that's a big one. And, you know, it's really expensive. So I don't think we should base our decisions solely on expense. But again, we're talking about the unnecessary aspect of some of this testing and how it's creating, you know, financial ruin in the economy because it's not necessary. And this is an expensive one. And I know because I work with women that don't have insurance, and it can be hundreds of dollars should they choose this. And if they don't know what it's about, you know, how can they choose? So rubella, all this means is it's testing your rubella status. So are you positive? Do you have antibodies or do you not? So are you immune or are you not? It's not, it's just a screening tool. It can't tell you much else, and it can't tell you if you're going to get rubella or any such thing. It's just simply saying, is this woman immune or not? Now, rubella can be dangerous to pregnant women in the first trimester. So some would say, well, knowing her status is helpful. She would want to know if, you know, she is at risk for that. Can she get rubella from a little kid? Well, she could, but most kids are vaccinated, unfortunately. In this case, you know, it does protect pregnant women, but, you know, most pregnant women just aren't going to contract rubella because kids are being vaccinated against it. And you have to consider that some of this prenatal testing, where for some women might be done at 8 weeks, for some women it's not being done till 16 weeks, and they're already past the first trimester. So it doesn't even matter. I mean, unfortunately, it doesn't matter at that point. All it can tell a woman is you're immune or not. So she can decide after the baby's been born, and if she plans to get pregnant again, if she's going to vaccinate herself against rubella or not. So some of these are really long-winded issues that, you know, we really have to just think more about. You know, I feel the same in a sense about syphilis and hepatitis B, you know, where they can be really important to know in high-risk women. Again, I think it's in identifying the high-risk women and asking women to identify themselves, you know, not necessarily to midwives or doctors, but for their own benefit. You know, if you have a lifestyle where you may be at risk for these things, then that's what you need to know to make the decision to take the test or not. Antibody screen, again, if someone is Rh negative, then that might be something they want to look at, especially if they've had a positive baby before or a miscarriage or, you know, something that may mean they have antibodies to their own blood type floating through their bloodstream. But again, if women understood that, they could make their own choice. And the antibody screen can certainly be ordered alone. You don't need this whole expensive panel unless you really want it. But again, it's becoming required and routine in some places, which is my biggest problem, I suppose, that we don't lose the right to say what we think we need and what we want. Because certainly any woman that is explained these things to will make an informed choice for her. I don't think any woman would intentionally sabotage her health, especially when pregnant. So that kind of is the blood work there, the prenatal panel, the CBC. I think a lot goes into just thinking about, you know, your own history, what you feel you're at risk for, what you feel other people deserve to know, as far as, you know, this being their knowledge as well, because, you know, with few exceptions, women aren't ordering their own blood work. It's sort of property of Dr. So-and-so or midwife so-and-so. So that plays into it. The expense of these tests certainly plays into it. Let's talk a little bit about some other testing. So some cultures that are done by urine testing or swab, vaginal swabs, and gonorrhea and chlamydia, the two sexually transmitted infections, can be done either way. They can be done via a vaginal swab, and that usually involves a pelvic exam, you know, a vaginal exam. So I think women need to be aware of that too. Why are pap smears part of the initial testing? That's initial first trimester standard routine testing. Why? Why would we want someone up and in our bodies near our cervix when our body is doing the best it can at protecting everything in there in every possible way it can? No, again, unless there are risk factors, unless a woman has history of something, especially with the pap smear, as far as like, cervical cancer goes, then why? Why do women even know why they're, you know, putting their legs up in stirrups at the first visit? And that it's dangerous. You don't need a doctor or a midwife to introduce an infection into your body and up into your uterus, because that's the risk of a vaginal exam at any point. And why would you risk that in early pregnancy? You know, when pregnancy is obviously more fragile, and who wants to spend their whole pregnancy with some kind of brewing infection that came from a vaginal exam? I think we have to have really good reasons for these things. And the thing is, with the gonorrhea and chlamydia, it's not that we should not be testing. There are certainly women at risk. These diseases can lay dormant. Sometimes women don't know they have them because their partners are not being honest. So we need to talk about all these issues, and women need to understand that, you know, there's multiple ways to test. And again, a urine test for gonorrhea or chlamydia is a lot less invasive. However, it's a lot more expensive. So if you do want to be tested for these things and you don't want a vaginal exam, you don't need to have one. You can get a urine test. It's a tricky issue because the medical world treats STIs in particular as nobody is to be trusted. You know, they will test several times in a pregnancy for gonorrhea and chlamydia in the beginning and at the end and sometimes in between, just because they don't trust that the woman couldn't be brewing an STI. And of course, I think, you know, every woman knows what's best for her. And if she doesn't know what's going on in her relationships, as far as what her partner's doing, then she needs to know that that's a risk factor. And, you know, she can always be tested at any point in the pregnancy. And I've certainly worked with women that, you know, at the first visit when their partner was present, didn't talk a whole lot about the possibility of those infections or talk about the testing, but privately would say, yes, I privately do want to be tested. I understand what it's about, and I understand that I may be at risk. So, again, it's talking about these things. And to me, it's leaving these choices up to us, the women, and not assuming that everybody falls, under the same category. So the pap smear, a little bit about that again. It's just a pet peeve of mine, actually. I would never think of doing such a thing, you know, unless somebody wanted one for some reason that I can barely think of. Again, maybe they've had cervical issues. But again, it's an individual discussion with each woman, in my opinion, even if they have had issues, because it's about, you know, how the cervical cells might change with the hormones of pregnancy and, you know, how that alters the test and just plain old getting up there in the cervix and what the risks of that are versus the risks of whatever you're testing for. So a pap smear should not be routine. And I just wish that would get through to all the women seeing doctors that walk in there for that first visit and just, you know, no one even tells them what it's about. They're given a gown and this is just part of the first visit. It's dangerous. And, you know, if you want one, that's your business, but please consent to it and understand what it's about and what these tests are for. Because a pap smear, I just can't see the reasoning routinely for that in early pregnancy. It's one of the stupidest ideas, frankly, I have ever heard. So the last possible routine testing in the first trimester that we'll talk about today is a urine culture. So we're talking before about getting a urine culture for gonorrhea or chlamydia, and you don't have to want to be tested for gonorrhea or chlamydia to just get a plain old urine culture. So, you know, women that have had a history of urinary tract infections or group B strep infections may opt for a urine culture early on, and that's not completely crazy, in my opinion, when there's a history there. You know, some urinary tract infections are asymptomatic and they can cause miscarriage and preterm birth and really awful intrauterine infection. So that's not meant to be scary. It's just a fact that some women are at risk for that and that finding that out earlier may be better. But again, across the board, I don't know. I think it's really about looking at your own risk factor and, you know, turning within. Again, it's not all science and medical history. Sometimes it's turning within and saying, do I need this test? And not looking for anybody else's opinion or thoughts and just listening to yourself. And I think women know. Sometimes there is no reason that they can give voice to other than, yes, I think I need to do this test. I'd like to do this test. And then other times women know without a doubt, they don't need this test. They don't want it. So that is a very valid way of making your decisions. And that's something that's not honored in the culture that we're in, especially here in the US with medical mainstream birth. It would be ridiculous. However, it's pretty ironic that women aren't being given information. So how are we supposed to choose? You know, we're not being asked to choose based on information and education, and then we may be ridiculed for purely making a decision intuitively. So I say we need them both or can use them both. We have access to both, and that's wonderful. And at different times, we can use them both. We can access what we know intellectually, and we can access what we know intuitively with anything in pregnancy, but choosing to take some tests can be helpful, choosing in that way, because the mainstream, buzz over tests, such as the Group B strep test, which is for another time, because that's third trimester, is quite large and scary, depending on what you read, especially online. So sometimes women have to work a lot harder to tune into their intuitive sense when the screaming, you know, mainstream is outside their window. So that's it for today as far as testing. Again, ultrasound is a very serious first trimester way of testing, and that we just have to save for another time. All I'm going to say about that for today is please don't consent to ultrasound testing at your first visit or at any visit unless you have a really valid medical reason. And that's, again, a whole nother topic. Please don't consent to ultrasound for dating. So you walk in for your first visit and they plop you down with the ultrasound machine because they want a date. They don't trust what you said your last period or your conception date was. They want a date from a machine. Please don't do it. Just say, I'm not interested in that, or I need to think about it, or whatever you have to say. But that is why I guess, I mean, I'm making a total guess here, you know, over 90% of ultrasounds are being done at the first visit. It's not because anything is wrong or they're able to see anything at that point as far as baby development, because the baby hasn't developed yet. So it's not about any of that yet. It's about dating, and it's putting your baby at risk for we don't even know the effects of ultrasound. So please, 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 please don't do that. Get your information about ultrasound before, because dating is not a good reason, and it's for them. It's never really for you. A few other things, you can order your own tests, such as your own blood work. I know when I was in Arizona, there was a mobile blood work sort of unit called Health Check, and that may be in your area. I don't know. You could just Google self-order blood work or order own blood work tests or whatever. Your insurance, if you have any, most likely won't cover those kind of tests because they're not being ordered by somebody else, but you have privacy with those tests, which I think can go a long way, and you can order what you think you need. And especially if you're doing your own care or not seeing a medical professional, you may choose to still have some of these tests and not know how to get a hold of them. So to wrap it up, thanks for listening today. In all of these cases, I say, take responsibility for your own health, realize your own risk factors, look at your own history, talk to yourself, listen to your own voice, realize that a lot of this is political in this day and age, that it's about covering people's butts and not necessarily doing the good thing or the right thing or the safe thing or the healthy thing for women and babies, but it's about keeping everybody together and not looking at anybody as an individual. But you have every right to that. So if somebody isn't able to look at you like that, you either find another person to work with, or you go off on your own, or you do it for yourself and you understand what you're doing and what you're looking at. Always, 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 if you consent to a blood test, get your own results. Don't wait for the doctor's office or the midwife's office to call you and say, oh, we got your results, everything's fine. I can't tell you how many times I've looked at people's lab reports that they've gotten from their doctor or midwife, and there's something on there that they should have known. So maybe the pap smear said they had a yeast infection. Nobody ever told them. Or, I don't know, maybe the platelet count on their CBC was really low. Nobody ever told them. So don't trust anybody. Get your own blood work. And if you need help, interpreting it, there are certainly books and resources. We are not medical professionals here at Indie Birth, but we can possibly help, just look at basic lab results and explain generalities to you so that you can make your own interpretation. So don't take someone's word for it. Get your own results. Get a hard copy. Get a copy. These are yours. You need to understand them. You need to know where they're at, and you need to know if there's something to know. This is your information. There may or may not be a need for this testing or any testing in your pregnancy. There may be. I have no idea because everybody's different. And so the point of this isn't to say that any of this is stupid or unnecessary, but that it's largely unnecessary for, women as a whole. We need to each make our own choices and understand what we're choosing for ourselves. So please discover this for yourself, empower yourself by taking control of your own information, and best of luck with that. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.